their falafel sandwich sign up on the marquee. They have a dine-in area where you can eat one and you can take out. Visit the store at 519 East University Avenue in Champaign or online at worldharvestfoods.com. Or you can call and ask about a particular item, I guess, 356-4444. There is a fundraiser at the Indigo Gallery down in also on University Avenue. It's coming up, kicking off on Tuesday, but there's a culmination events the middle of the month, Saturday and Sunday, Friday and Saturday and Sunday. There's some musical offerings. And the 15th is going to be a Valentine's Day party. I guess might as well celebrate it twice, I suppose, if you're inclined to. I got to get out of here. It's time for the labor hour. Commend them to your attention. Opinions are those of the speakers, not necessarily shared by others at the station. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a Union man or a thug for J.H. Blair. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
My daddy... Hello, folks. Welcome to the edition of the World Labor Hour. Brought to you on the air, listener-supported community radio station WFT, broadcasting from downtown Champaign, Illinois, and webcasting live worldwide at WFT.org. Views and opinions expressed here are those of speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now here's Bob with some of our underwriting announcements.
This hour programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed and underemployed helpline, give them a call at 217-328-2295. And the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. And programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber. He believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour.
Okay, thank you, Bob. Well, we got a couple special guests in the studio today, and before we get to them, we're going to do a couple of news stories here, and I guess we can start with Bob.
I got a real short one here out of Japan, I guess. Nintendo's president, Satoru Iwata, announced that he will cut his salary in half after the company recorded a tumble in profits. According to AFP, Satoru will receive half his usual salary for the next 5 months, while Nintendo board members will receive only they'll receive a 20-30% cut in their salaries. The Japanese gaming console titan's revenues dipped 8.1% during the last 9 months of 2013, following sluggish demand for the Wii U game console amid fierce competition from Microsoft's Xbox One console and Sony's PlayStation 4. Interesting that the people in Japan will step up when their company isn't doing good and take a cut in salary. I don't think you'll see that happen at too many American corporations.
No, that's what's interesting about that story.
Yes, it is. It is.
Okay, I just got a little local related story here. This is from Daryl Cruz, a resident of Urbana. He wrote a little email I saw this morning that said, the Champaign City Council is on the verge of approving a new tax increment financing district for the sole purpose of giving Kraft Foods Incorporated a $3.6 million tax subsidy to build a new warehouse.
Wow.
According to City Manager Dorothy David, tax increment financing has no other purpose and can be terminated once the warehouse project is funded. One might ask how the city council was convinced that a Fortune 500 company with recent quarterly profits of $500 million revenue over $4.4 billion in investments in the local plant of $20 million to $30 million each of the past 10 years suddenly needs a taxpayer subsidy. Could it be because the city allowed Kraft's agent, Grant Thornton, a high-powered corporate tax advisor, to play the lead role in writing the redevelopment project plan and to conduct the eligibility study? City Manager David stated in an August 2013 memo, Kraft's consultant, Grant Thornton, will do most of the work to prepare the documentation to qualify this property with review by the city. Both reports were submitted on Grant Thornton letterhead and prepared for the city of Champaign. The benefits to Kraft are obvious. The benefits to the community are less so, and long-term job growth in neither guaranteed nor promised by Kraft. So one must have to wonder if this TIF project represents the fleecing or I'm sorry, the flexing of corporate muscle by threatening the community not to build if not approved, and when given the opportunity to directly manipulate TIF laws for corporate gain at taxpayers' expense. Well, it's interesting about this. We had some craft workers on the show, Bob, if you remember, a couple months ago.
Right.
And what's happening there is that there are more and more of their full-time people are basically through attrition, not being replaced, and they're replacing them with low-wage temporary help,
right.
Part-time temporary help.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know,
did they have a union there?
No.
No union.
No. Humco next door that was closed and torn down always had the Teamsters union. And it wasn't the greatest, but they at least had some union representation. They did go on strike one time for, it was probably about a month back in the, when was that? Back in, I think, in the 90s, late 90s.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because Kraft always made sure that whatever the contract settlement was with the Teamsters and Humco, they'd always pay their workers just a little bit more, just so they wouldn't form a union.
The workers that came on the station here were looking to become unionized with the UFCW.
Yep, Food and Commercial Workers. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know that that's in progress anymore.
I haven't heard anything, but I know there's stories is that there was a lot of harassment going on
right.
of the people right. who were had been there for a while, trying to make them quit, it probably seemed like,
But you're right. They're replacing many of those people with temporary part-time workers.
Low-wage paid temporary workers, with yes.
Less benefits.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things we heard this morning, good morning to all the listeners of the Labor Hour. This is Brother Aaron Ammons. I just had to jump in
on
this.
And Brian Dollar, yes.
And Brian.
Yes. Yes, folks. Please go ahead.
So the temporary service piece is something that's come to our attention also through CWC. And our brother Martell Miller brought it to our attention this morning at our Breakfast Club meeting that one of the things that's happening during these job fairs or the temp services that individuals are being allowed to work right up to the day of the probationary period and then told they're not needed anymore.
Mm.
So that's one of the ways that the companies are now trying to get around paying a living wage or actually bringing a person on for the entire time and having to pay benefits and all those types of things. And it's extremely discouraging for someone who gets up, who's going to work every day, who's there on time, giving you everything that you've asked of them, and then you tell them at the point, at the brink, right. that they can come on full time, that they're no longer needed.
Yes, false hope at the very least.
Yeah.
But this situation at Kraft, it's kind of out on the outskirts of town. You really don't realize it's there, but this is like one of the, if not the largest food processing plant in the North American continent. So there's a lot of bustling going on there. A lot happens out there if you ever drive by there.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's this $3.6 million. That's no small chunk of change, And then when it comes around to funding social services in town, well, where we got the money for this, that, and the other.
They always plead poverty on that.
And then, folks throw up their hands. So
that's
the situation here in Shanghai.
And this is in conjunction with the $500,000 subsidy Ward Martin got to move up to from South Neal Street to North Prospect.
Right.
Why? The other big why is the downtown, Hyatt Hotel complex. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a multi-billion-dollar company. I mean, they're moving there not because they're getting tax money. It's because of the downtown boom, the football games, basketball games, and all the tourism here. That's why they came here. They didn't need any kind of corporate subsidy. I mean, this just really gets under my skin.
I think you were right when you had your little slip of the tongue there saying fleecing, because somebody is getting fleeced in this deal. Yeah.
And, of course, we heard where Speaker Madigan is proposing a half cut for all the corporations in the state of Illinois so that they can also get a huge tax break, costing the taxpayers about $750 million possibly. So that's another topic that I'm sure we'll get into a little bit later.
Right? Okay, very good. Okay, Bob, you had one more news story, then we're going to take a quick music break, and then we're going to get right into the thick of things here with our two guests.
Yeah, I wanted to mention what was happening up at Northwestern University this week. The quarterback of their football team, Kane Coulter, is taking steps to start a union movement. It says, for the first time in the history of college sports, athletes are asking to be represented by a labor union, taking formal steps on Tuesday to begin the process of being recognized as employees. Ramaji Huma, president of the National College Players Association, filed a petition in Chicago on behalf of football players at Northwestern, submitting the form at the regional office of the National Labor Relations Board. They're going to be backed by the United Steelworkers Union. Huma also filed union cards signed by an undisclosed number of Northwestern players with the NLRB. And it says there that an overwhelming majority of them signed them. And they say this is about finally giving college athletes a seat at the table, says Huma, a former UCLA linebacker who created the NCPA as an advocacy group in 2001. Athletes deserve an equal voice when it comes to their physical, academic, and financial protections.
Yes. It's not about getting money. I mean, it's about protections, basically.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And I think it's interesting because they're, of course, using the precedent set by graduate employees, I believe.
Yeah. They bring that up in this article and say that, you know, GEO, yeah, exactly.
Oh, so. Okay, good deal. Okay, you're listening to the World Labor Hour on Listen Support Community Radio Station, WFT. We're going to take a quick music break, and then we're going to come back and have a program here with Brian Doliner and Aaron Ammons. Stay tuned.
They put their club upside your head and then accuse you of attacking them. My brothers and sisters, we have to put a stop to this. And it will never be stopped until we stop it ourselves. This is American democracy. And those of you who are familiar with it know that in America, democracy is hypocrisy. Now, if I'm wrong, put me in jail. But if you can't prove that if democracy is not hypocrisy, then don't put your hands on me.
This time the revolution will be televised. Yeah. Broadcast live through Mandela's eyes. Sparked by the speech of Martin. Blocks rally in the streets, they marching. The greedy banks die a thousand thousand. By any means necessary, Malcolm X.
Yes.
We locking on from Boston to Compton. Risking the rest to get the mission accomplished.
What we fighting for?
We fighting for our kids' future.
Against who?
Against the sons of J. Edgar Hoover.
From the Great Depression
to the Great Recession.
This is the home of the brave.
Where's the great redemption? Homeland victory. Joan of Arc refused to move. Think Rosa Parks. Super rich Warren Buffett said tax the wealthy. Citizen militia Prince Machiavelli. Heartbreak Hill, we ain't built to lose a marathon. Assalamu alaikum, Louis Farrakhan. From the roots of Bob Marley. With the vision and the attitude of Marcus Garvey.
Show me what democracy looks like. This is what democracy looks like. Tell me what democracy looks like.
Okay, that was the band, the hip-hop political band Twice Thou out of Boston with the song Democracy. Want to welcome our special guests, Aaron Ammons and Brian Doliner, to the World Labor Hour. Welcome, guys.
Welcome. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us on, Dave.
Okay. Now, Brian, you're the one that kind of suggested this a while back, and part of the reason was that is today Langston Hughes' birthday?
Today's Langston Hughes' birthday, born 1902, February 1st, Langston Hughes. That's right.
Okay. Well, great. Then let's just...
This also sort of kicks off Black History Month here.
Absolutely.
February 1st, of course, with Langston Hughes' birthday, the great blues poet, commonly associated with the Harlem Renaissance, but was also very much a longtime labor supporter and longtime leftist, especially in the 30s, advocating for poor folks worldwide. So we have to remember Langston Hughes today.
Yes, you know, when I was a kid growing up, my father had one of the books in his library was by Langston Hughes called Famous American Negro Heroes. So you can tell how old the book was with that title, you know. But it was, I mean, it was a good book. I mean, I used to read it when I was like, you know, starting to learn how to read, basically, you know. And so he did a lot of, he published a lot of stuff. I mean, so he didn't just do poetry or...
In children's literature, he did a lot of books for children, like this whole Negro First series, as you referenced. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, you know, like I told you, we don't need to, you know, in order to talk about Black history, we don't need February for that. But it's always a good, how should I put it, a good excuse, if nothing else. So I'm glad we got this. And I'm trying to get former U.S. Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney on the World Labor Hour here. I'm kind of working on negotiating that right now. So, but nonetheless, let's just talk about whatever's on your mind. So whoever wants to just kick it off, and we'll have a free-for-all here, whatever you just kind of stream of consciousness.
Well, one thing is... you know, I wanted to let folks know that I just released a book collecting African-American history in Illinois here, a book called The Negro in Illinois, the WPA Papers. This is an old WPA manuscript from the 1930s that was produced. They wrote the Black history of Illinois, for example, Chicago being founded by African-American, a black man, DuSable.
And I think Urbana was too, actually.
Now, I have to confirm that.
Okay. I'd heard that at one time, anyway. Fur trapper.
The native Potawatomi were here, so in some sense, it was people of color who founded this area, for sure. But I do have a book talk coming up. I wanted to announce this on February 15th, a Saturday at 2 p.m. at the Urbana Free Library. I'll be talking about the book. It's for many years sat in the archives, and I was just able to put it together and publish it in the last year. So this is one of the most thorough and in-depth black histories of Illinois, telling interesting little tidbits of history that folks wouldn't be so familiar with. Folks, you know that this is the land of Lincoln and Abraham Lincoln, but few folks know about his black barber, William de Fleurville, who was a barber, prominent barber in Springfield, owned property in Springfield and in Bloomington as well. These interesting little tidbits of history that we all didn't learn when we were in school growing up. But this history of the black laws, there was slavery in Illinois, and particularly slavery in southern Illinois. It tells the history of the abolitionist movement, the Underground Railroad, which was quite vibrant here in Illinois. Chicago was known as a sink house of abolition. Mm-hmm. So it tells all this history up through the Civil War, past the Civil War, the story of Ida B. Wells and her newspaper work. It tells the story of black women who tried to get some of the first monuments in Chicago named after DuSable, the black founder of Chicago. There's a story in the 1930s. In 1933, there was a World's Fair held in Chicago, and there was a group of a couple hundred women who tried to get and successfully got a cabin named after DuSable, and was said to be a replica of his cabin that he inhabited there in downtown Chicago, right where the river meets the lake. And today there's a sculpture, a bust of DuSable, an imagined sculpture that's right there where Michigan crosses the river. And so there's been a long history of people trying to recover this black history, recover the memory of somebody like Jean-Baptiste Point DuSable, the first black founder of Chicago. And they were starting to record this history in the 1930s in all new ways. And the WPA was employing unemployed writers.
Could you explain that to some of the listeners that may not know, especially younger listeners, what the WPA was?
The WPA was a stimulus package,
okay,
we might call it today. But this was a massive program. And they were building bridges, roads, buildings. The student union here on campus was built by WPA labor.
State national parks, I believe, too.
State and national parks, all established by and maintained by WPA workers. They created the CCC, a group of youth.
Civilian workers. Conservation Corps?
Yeah, yeah. And if you were under 21, you could go work for them. My grandpa went and worked for them.
Okay.
They built roads like Lakeshore Drive, one of the most beautiful drives in the country, in Chicago. But they also employed unemployed writers. And, of course, black writers in the 1930s had a hard time going, so they put these black writers back to work.
And it was writers and other artists as well, wasn't it?
And the many writers, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they had a whole project to create state guidebooks. You can still find these guidebooks at used bookstores, state by state. There's one for Illinois. There's one for Kansas, Texas, California, New York, mm-hmm. all of the states. And when they first came out, they were telling all white history. These were all white writers, largely. The Illinois Reader, the state guidebook, 600 pages long and 6 pages dedicated to African Americans. So when this came out, black leaders started raising a stink. Folks in D.C. were challenging the Roosevelt administration, and they formed separate 17 projects to record black history. One of those was Illinois and based in Chicago. And so Richard Wright worked on it, the famous novelist who wrote Black Boy and Native Son. Catherine Dunham, the dancer, worked for the project. Margaret Walker, a poet and novelist, worked on the project. Jack Conroy, a white proletarian writer, a son of a coal miner from central Missouri, wrote a famous novel in the 30s called The Disinherited, one of the best proletarian novels of the period. Jack Conroy went, a white writer, worked alongside these black writers and was a co-supervisor along with Arna Bontemps, who was, in fact, best friends with Langston Hughes, and Bontemps himself a novelist and poet from the Harlem Renaissance. And so all these figures worked side by side producing this history, this black history of Illinois, and it was written, finished. There were 29 chapters, but the project was shut down due to World War II. The papers shuffled down to a basement in a couple file cabinets, and they sat there for several decades until I came upon them about almost 10 years ago now. okay. and put them back together, and we just published it. It's out from the University of Illinois Press.
You know, I went to your last event at the Urbana Public Library about a year or so ago.
For my first book,
yeah, it was the
Black Cultural
Front. Yes, mm-hmm. That was fascinating. I really highly recommend, so I want to highly recommend anybody, any listeners out there to in 2 weeks' time here, Saturday at the Urbana Library, to check out Brian's stuff, because, you know, it's fascinating. I found the stories themselves, of course, were incredible, you know, but also I found your story of discovering them was almost right. like an archaeological project. You know?
right.
Absolutely. And so there's all these lost pieces here of history, all this fascinating history that's of relevance for Black history, white history, labor history. You take the case of the rent strikes in the early 30s, the unemployed councils were very vibrant in Chicago, and working first and foremost on the south side of Chicago, in Bronzeville, as we now know it today.
Mm-hmm.
And in the early 30s, there was several incidents where the members of the Communist Party were organizing the South Side, fighting evictions. People were getting evicted from their homes in the early 30s, and folks were going in. After people would get kicked out, they would take their furniture, move them back into their apartments, sometimes fighting with police. There was one incident in August of 1931, August 3rd. Groups of people had just put a woman back into her home, were marching through the streets on the South Side, and three Black workers were shot and killed by the police mm-hmm. on August 3rd, 1931.
Mm-hmm.
This created a major uproar. It was in the newspapers, and it actually halted the mayor, Mayor Cermak. He halted all evictions after this.
Okay.
So this is, can you imagine, you know, stopping all the foreclosures today,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
okay, because people were willing to put their lives on the line,
mm-hmm.
and workers fighting side by side with one another around these issues. So I think these people set a real precedent for us today in the kind of work we still need to do.
Yeah, and it amazes me how much that Black history, the civil rights movement, and labor history both intersect, I mean, constantly. I mean, you have a lot of there's just so many parallels, so many, you know, people are involved in both, and, you know, so I think that's why I can justify having this on here, because it's a much, I mean, Black history is labor history, I mean, let's face
Absolutely.
It, you know, because it's a struggle of a people trying to get economic, you know, social and political justice. So, okay, Aaron, so what have you been up to lately?
Well, first of all, I wanted to give mad shouts out and mad love to we call him BD, you
BD.
Know what I mean? But I saw something very enlightening for me when we went to Chicago to see to listen to you give the talk in Chicago at the George Washington Carver Library. I grew up in that same neighborhood in Chicago, so that was a library we took field trips.
Which neighborhood was that?
That's the South Side of Chicago, 103rd. That's
Woodson,
on Halstead Street.
Woodson Library, 95th. No,
yeah, right, Woodson. Woodson,
Woodson
yeah.
at 95th and Halstead.
Yeah, yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so. We went there, and I walked in the room, and I thought it would be like, you know, a little situation where you got a couple of people in a circle, and then I walk in, and it's these major individuals who are prominent, well-known, world-renowned folks up here, and then I look up, and he's on C-SPAN, you know, and sometimes I think we just don't do justice in relationship to the individuals who are putting in this kind of work, the, like you said, the archaeological dig that he basically had to go through to pull that together, and what it means, what that ripple effect means. So actually, Brian will be on with us on Higher Ground with me on February the 8th, also talking about the new book, The Negro in Illinois, but I'm sure we'll get into the Black Cultural Front also. And I just really appreciate all your work and the way that you bring the history to us so that we can bask in it and we can learn from it. So I just wanted to make sure I did that first.
Okay, very good.
Well, thanks, Aaron. You know, it's our work in the community. You know, I couldn't do any of this kind of historical work without having the on-the-ground experience, you know, of doing this in the live, you know. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's our work over the last 10 years that's given me, you know, I think some kind of street cred that I can pull this off. You know?
Okay. All right. So, I mean, but I think that's important. And of course, the conversation, to be able to have a conversation about labor issues, racial issues, and especially with a group of individuals, with a group of white men, right? Okay. Who are cognizant enough and appreciative enough of the sacrifice and the pain, and then and give me, for instance, the space that I need to be able to vent if I need to, but still be able to work together to get issues solved. And as I grow and I start to be more appreciative and sensitive to other groups oppression or repression or pain. You know, I grow in that regard also by being able to express myself. But when I have to suppress that, then it becomes more and more difficult for me. And so one of the outlets for me, of course, has been the poetry and the spoken word and stuff like that. And of course, now that I'm the, how do you say, I haven't been sworn in yet as president of SEIU Chapter 119, but I have been.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So I'm really starting to get a deeper history, deeper understanding of the history of labor, and African Americans in particular. So, it's a very interesting intersection for me to be and try to blend the arts, talking about Brownsville. I've been really, you know, I'm deeply moved by Oscar Brown Jr., who was, of course, a part of the labor movement and the arts in Chicago. And just listening to a lot of, just as you throw the names around, I'm starting to connect those dots. So, interestingly enough, on February the 6th, this Thursday coming up at Speak Cafe, the, Song, Poetry, Expression, Art, and Knowledge, the open mic poetry set that I host. There's also a CD release that's going to take place there, and it is the Ill Poets Society Volume 2, the Aaron Ammons Project. So,
sounds like I got written up in the Buzz this week.
Yeah, it's been written up on smilepolitely.com, The Buzz, and a couple of other, I think one other place was we were going to do a radio piece. I was on the radio last night. Yeah, I was on the radio here last night at WEFT with the Smile Politely group at 5:30. So, but Ray Morales has been wonderful. Ray pulled it together, wrote the grant and everything, and brought all the artists together. And it's inspiring to me to see how we touch one another in different ways and inspire one another to do great things. So he has created a platform for me to have a showcase, so to speak, but also for the other artists to get a chance to get their information out. So that's February 6th, Thursday, Speak Cafe. It's free and open to the public. Because it's my daddy's birthday, we're going to have cake instead of pie. So y'all come on out. And
where's that at, by the way, Aaron?
Crannard Art Museum.
Okay.
500 East Peabody, right? North of the Law Building.
Okay, the art museum and not the performance
center. Yeah, not the performing arts center, okay. The art museum.
Okay.
It's free. We're going to have 200 copies of the CD that we'll be giving away for free for folks who get there. So we expect to have an amazing time. And as we kick off Black History Month, there's a poem that I wrote a long time ago. It may be around 10 years old. I'm not exactly sure, but it's something that I wrote for Black History Month. So I always do it whenever Black History Month rolls around. And it made me think about just how all this comes together. And instead of Black History 365, you get, you know, what we get 28 days this year, right? And we always said, you know, keep hope alive, or, you know, keep the struggle going. And the title of the poem is What is the Struggle? And as I thought about it, it came to me that the struggle is to recapture the captives whose minds have been lost because they've adapted to ideas and definitions that tell us what black is. We get a whole month to discuss, so we rush. Demanding holidays on a place on a bus that don't lead back to Africa. Putting men on pedestals that your enemies help you boost. So you stuck in a dream and the chickens rarely come home to roost. On this sojourn, we hide from truth. Bombarded daily by the brainwash, but the Renaissance poets are the stain wash for the spots scattered throughout the hood. On special occasions, we all hold hands and the complacent tell you, it's all good. Somebody died for you. And I say, yeah, I know. Martin, Malcolm, Mega, and a bunch more, too. But now, what that do? Even sinless, we still spiral into an abyss that's endless. Are we supposed to pretend this stealing of our souls wasn't done by so-called Muslims, Jews, and Christians? See, this must be mentioned because the most important thing stolen was your attention. 12 minus 1 still leaves 11. And see, leadership ain't nothing with followers that's scared to go to heaven. Be it in your mind or a place in the sky, we all run from knowledge and ain't nobody rushing to die for what they believe in. Excuse after excuse is what they keep preaching. Do you know who you are? That you possess more energy than an atom bomb. Do you know You're a star. See, we scream progress because this month used to be a week. That's why you're constantly told you're the meek, because the weak are fit to be slaves. Given dominion of the world, and this is how we behave, begging at an altar for forgiveness when we falter, instead of coming at them in waves of consciousness, we indulge in nonsense. Thus, we perish while we breathe. Our children seethe with anger because they see us as hypocrites and cowards, so we beat them like the slave masters did us. We lie to them and destroy their trust like the slave masters did us. We feed them garbage like the slave masters did us. We give them no education like the slave masters did us, and then we fill them with the same fear that has captivated us. See, it's easy for punks to pop trunks and talk junk to other chumps, but if I ask you to stop selling dope and protect the hood, then somehow I'm the chump. Why, the oil tycoons raise the price at the pump and sleep easy at night. But if I stick you up, then it's a fight. With our habitude, they figure, it'll take us another 50 years before we approach black the way we do. Nigger, wow. You mean black is defined as void of power? And so where you think you've been given leeway, it's just a new way to reinforce inferiority. Sad and sullen is his story of our African memoirs. Why does this month only seem to remind me of deep scars instead of deep roots into Egypt? Because you've been clipped at the cerebral, tricked into thinking you're feeble. Did I say black also means evil? Listen, class. People are defined by culture, language, and a landmass. So worry of wrath from an illusion only contributes to your confusion and leaves you ignorantly defending an illogical conclusion. Who's in charge of your thought? That's the struggle.
Thank you, Aaron. Man, that was very powerful, very powerful. I mean, I want to let the listeners know that he did that totally off the top of his head. He had nothing written in front of him. I'm serious. I mean, that's what really, I mean, that was just incredible. So we definitely have to, when the CD is ready and stuff, let us know, because I think this is something we'd love to share with the listeners and stuff.
Well, you know, I'm hoping that this new phase of the way that I'm approaching my art and my work is that after getting into something like that, and it's so much in it that I have an opportunity to dissect it and break it down and listen to, you know, entertain thoughts and questions and stuff like that. Where is this coming from? For me as an artist, it has really just been, most of the work is to just like, I need to vent and decompress. I have a piece on the new album. It's called Product of My Environment. And that's what I'm focusing on. I just want to vent, decompress, and, you know, and get this stuff up off my chest. And I think that what's so welcoming about being in a space like this and working with people like you guys over the years is that doesn't scare you away from me. You understand what I'm saying? It just says, okay, that's, we need to talk about that. Let's discuss it. Let's see what, you know, what you meant by different things and go through that experience with you. But once we get done with that, we got some stuff that we need to go work on together. Yeah. Right? You know,
yeah.
And what I see happening in the broader community is that I'll get labeled as unpatriotic or angry black man or whatever, or anti-police, all these other different things.
Well, you'd be in good company then, because a lot of great people have been labeled those things.
Yes, indeed, including Langston Hughes, right?
I think so. Okay, we're going to take a quick music break, and then we're going to be right back. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on Listener Supporting Radio Station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. So please stay tuned.
is highway robbery. Corporate thugs pulled a heist on the economy. They shooting Thai criminals. For you and I, the proportions are biblical. Stole our dreams and sold us a nightmare. The gloves are off, but they don't want to fight fair. Pay your fair share. We won't budge. They occupied Boston with tents in the mud. We want jobs now. Not a senator with a bobblehead like Scott Brown. And what's up with Robert Gallery? Cradles to crayons to evicting a family? There's a movement erupting. Millions of people empowered to do something. This ain't about race. You must be crazy. It's black, brown, yellow, and white. 8 to 80.
We the people, unified people. Strength in numbers. We're gonna leave you banks frozen, 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 yeah. We the people, organized people. Strength in numbers. We're gonna leave you banks frozen, frozen.
A cookie, he want a glass of milk. Republicans and Democrats pass the guilt. We're indivisible as one nation. Protest vigil where you fundraise. You hold office, we holding you accountable. And this is what democracy looks like, doubting you. We on the ground, snow dry or wet cement. To keep families in their homes except the rent. Principal reduction, plus stop no fault evictions. Political destruction, city life. Vita Urbana, the three-legged stool, the sword, the shield, and the offer. Rebellions on the blocks of Boston. Bank pickets, now they stocks are dropping. Terminate the cash flow, they'll think rational. Mass action, non-violent radical.
We the people, unified people. Strength in numbers, we're gonna leave you banks frozen, 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 yeah. The people, organized people, strength in numbers, we're gonna leave you banks frozen, 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 yeah. We the people, unified people, strength in numbers, we're gonna leave you banks frozen, 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 yeah. We the people, organized people, strength in numbers, we're gonna leave you banks frozen, 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 yeah. Banks, 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 strength in numbers, numbers, yeah. Frozen, 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 yeah. We the people, unified people, strength in numbers, we're gonna, yeah. Frozen, 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 yeah. We the people, organized people, strength in numbers.
Okay, we're back. This is the World Labor Hour on Listener Support Community Radio Station, WFT. And Bob, you have some other underwriting announcements?
Yeah, Dave. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the Illinois Education Association Union. The Illinois Education Association's mission is to effect excellence and equity in public education and to be the advocacy organization for all public education employees. And also, the Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio.
Okay, thank you, Bob. Well, as we speak, there's demonstrations all over the country against the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement, including today in Chicago. I wanted to mention that, and also that this is the first Saturday of the month, so there'll be the monthly anti-war demonstration on the corner of Main and Neal Street with the local anti-war group AWARE. Want to give also let our listeners know about None Other Sports Show with Neil Parthen. It goes from 2 to 3 over at the other community radio station here in town, WRFU. It's from 2 to 3. And also on UPTV on Wednesday evenings at 6 p.m., Comcast Channel 6. And also on Comcast Channel 6 on Sundays from 4 to 5. 5 is Labor's Worldview TV. And last but not least, this coming Wednesday at the Brookings Center on the East Main Street in Urbana at 7 p.m. is going to be the 103rd State Rep debate between a guy named Rosenberg. I can't remember his first name. I'm sorry. Sam Rosenberg and Carol Ammons. So I thought that might... Having that mentioned last, I thought that might be a good lead into our next topic here.
All right. So, of course, I'm supporting Carol Ammons to be the next Democratic representative for the 103rd district. And it is very interesting to me to see how, of course, SEIU has endorsed Carol, the local chapters, of course, as well as the state council and local 73. And it's interesting to see how much, how little or absolutely nothing that her opponent has actually done, but receiving several different donations and even an endorsement before even having a conversation with Carol. Mm-hmm. A couple of these unions endorsed him and gave him money. And Carol, who has of course supported SEIU, passing out hot chocolate and hand warmers during our strike last year, walking with the GEO during their strike and standing the picket lines in solidarity while on the county board as an elected official, walking with AFSCME and picketing with them when they were in negotiations, because this is the level of union solidarity that she has displayed over the years, yet still having a very uphill battle in trying to get other unions to reciprocate that solidarity, which is a very interesting thing that we're learning through this process. So I won't dig too deep into that. Y'all might dig a little bit deeper. I'll let it go with that.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. The building trades are the ones who have endorsed Sam Rosenberg, okay, a man who has never been a union member, who has never been involved in the community as far as, activism or anything. Nobody even heard of. And that works for Carl Clinic's legal department. To me, it seems like for labor, it'd be an obvious choice. Now, I do know, unfortunately, we talk about this all the time on the World Labor Hour, about the disconnect oftentimes between labor leadership and what they do and the rank and file members of a particular union and what they would want. And oftentimes they're opposing. And in this case, it looks like this might be so, because I noticed over the last couple of weeks, I've been seeing all sorts of anger and bewilderment from various rank and file members of various building trade unions about what the heck's going on here. Mm-hmm. Why didn't they have both of them come to speak to the membership and let us decide? Mm-hmm. And this is just unfortunately too typical, and it's a real tragedy, because my gosh, I mean, in this day and age where our elected officials are selling us out left and right, both parties, you need, in my opinion, to elect more, not just more working people, but more working people who are advocates, that have a proven track record of fighting for what's right, and if need be, standing up and opposing the powers that be. Those are the people you want to be your representatives, in my opinion. Those are the people to be what the British call an advocate, which is their term for an attorney. I mean, that's, in my opinion, what
that's
has
cool.
to happen.
I like that.
Yes. I mean, so to me, it's just it's a no-brainer. And that's, a lot of building trade members out there know of Carol. They may not know her personally, but they know what she's done. They just can't understand it,
Now, I think part of this fight that Carol's been fighting is also a fight within labor,
mm-hmm.
which is a fight over the mass incarceration in the prison industrial complex. And Carol's position on the board over mm-hmm. the last 2 years taking up the fight to stop the jail expansion here in town, mm-hmm. which we know if they have more jail cells, they're going to fill them. Mm-hmm. And the sheriff is still stumping for more jail cells. It's largely this endorsement that's come as a result of Carol's open advocacy to stop this new jail, mm-hmm. to stop the building of this new jail, which would then ostensibly the building of it go to some of the local building trades, and that they would benefit directly from incarcerating people, which we know at least 60% of those at the county jail are African American. So, there's a fight, I think, going on within unions as to, are you know, at what cost are we willing to accept good jobs? You know, is it the cost of, you know, our black and brown and poor white brothers and sisters getting locked up? Are we going to accept that in order for us to get paid and catch a paycheck? So this is a fight that's got to take place within unions, and it's the degree to which the bloated mass incarceration system is beginning to make news, make national news, and people are starting to become aware of it, because increasingly you catch a DUI, you're going to get a glimpse of it. You're going to, you know, spend a weekend in the county jail. If you know, you catch a charge at a bar one night, you might find out about it. We have cousins or brothers or people who are increasingly becoming in contact with this the mass incarceration, over 2 million people locked up in this country. And so it's a fight that's going to have to be fought, and we're willing to fight it.
And most of those people who are locked up locally, nationally, statewide, of course, are for nonviolent drug offenses, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things that we thought about that, and Dave, we had this conversation early on, that somehow that she would be perceived as being not anti-union, but would be perceived as she had taken money out of their trough, so to speak, where they did not create an opportunity for them to build. Mm-hmm. But what's missing in the conversation is that we've always advocated for a mental health facility. Mm-hmm. There are things that can be built, right? You know, so to send the impression out, or for the whisper campaign to go out that Carol is somehow costing the union workers an opportunity to build. No, she's just saying, let's not build new jails that we don't need. Why don't we build a facility like a community center? Why don't we build a facility like a mental health facility that we know we need, that everyone saying that we need in the community? So I just wanted to make sure that we to set the record straight from that perspective.
And that's a very good point. And I believe that Carol is on record saying that. I mean, it's
absolutely
documented. Yeah. And when, as a county board member, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that was brought to our attention by an individual who called Carol up, and this is a well-known union member from one of the building trades, and he said, "Well, look, you know, when I first met you, you were challenging two of her opponent's major supporters around this nursing home issue. And they were trying to blame the AFSCME workers for being the reason why things were in such despair." And Carol said, "No, it's the reason because you ordered that bogus wood that's sitting out there rotten that you didn't let take care of, that the cost is going exorbitant." And she voted against laying off the 27 AFSCME workers that they all supported to lay off, because they wanted to either privatize or sell the nursing home. And Carol fought against all that. So, you know, the brothers and sisters need to understand that what you have as an individual who at heart is a person of the people, by the people, and for the people. But her passion is indeed for those of us who have been isolated. You know, so I just want people to understand that, you know, you should know who's going to represent you and who's not, especially someone who has a proven track record of this, as opposed to somebody who is who's already been bought and sold.
Did we have a caller, Bob, or?
I missed it, Dave.
Oh, okay.
By the time I got out there, they hung up.
Okay, I thought maybe we said something to inspire somebody or to make somebody angry, which either we like both, and we can deal with both. But, okay, well, again, that's going to be this coming Wednesday at Brookins County Board building at 7 p.m., and so definitely turn out for this. I think it's going to be an interesting debate.
And just so folks out there know, this is the
103rd state rep
for mm-hmm. Springfield, a position formerly held by Naomi Jacobson, who's not running again. And the primary will be what month?
It's March 18th. The actual date for the primary election is March 18th. Early voting starts March 3rd through March 15th. So we do encourage folks to get out and vote early. But the actual date is March 18th. And Naomi will be resigning. She is retiring. So she's basically in a state of limbo, basically, at this particular point. She's just holding the seat until, and I'm sure she's working. I don't want to minimize her efforts. She served for the last 10 or 12 years. And whenever you have an elected official who's been in a position like that, I'm sure there's going to be some things you agree with and that you disagree with. So I'm not trying to diminish her service at all, but she is, her term is basically up as of January of 2015. The winner of the general election in November of this year will take her seat.
Okay. Now, what's the deadline for voter registration to be able to vote?
Voter registration, February 18th is the last day that a person can register.
About 2 weeks.
That's right. So you got 2.5 weeks. The other organization, Citizens with Conviction, we are planning a voter registration drive. We're trying to lock down the location to make it convenient for everybody. But we're looking for that to be the weekend of the 15th and 16th. And so after they register, we're gonna shoot them over to the library so they can go and listen to BD's talk about the Negro in Illinois. So there's a couple of things. There's a lot of stuff going on here in the month of February for sure.
Okay. Just for any of our listeners who are not familiar with you and your wife, Carol, you guys, and Brian too, of course, I mean, you guys founded the local organization, CU Citizens for Peace and Justice. How long? It's been a while. I know it's been over 10 years. Do you remember when it was, the date?
Let's see. It's got to be at least 10 years, if not 11.
Late 03, 04.
Yeah. Okay. And, I mean, you guys had the Unity March every year.
That's right.
I mean, boy, you've really went head-to-head with the powers that be in this community. I think probably, I mean, there's been a lot of instances, but the one I think that's probably the most, that most people remember that I talked to casually about it is the Kiwan Carrington shooting by the Champaign Police.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think this sort of speaks to one of the issues that's been raised also about Carol's candidacy, because folks are saying that she's a polarizing figure, so to speak, and that she wouldn't be "quote unquote" effective as an elected official, which means that they just completely look over all the work that she's done at the county board
and the city council
mm-hmm. already. And even as a strong advocate, she's still able to work with her colleagues. I mean, look, she was voted as a friend of the Farmers Bureau. Okay, you know what I mean? While she was on the county board, you know, a lot of people have a lot of misperceptions out there based upon battles that they've lost. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So, you know, and it doesn't always have to be a battle. We would prefer to be able to just sit down at the table and negotiate in the best interest of all people. But when you go head to head with, you know, corporations or the powers that be, and they're comfortable with things being as status quo, then when you push them on that or you create new policies like the three initiatives that we brought to the city council around the Kiwan Carrington piece, they didn't get implemented that year. But lo and behold, two of them have been implemented since then. So we're about good government, mm-hmm. policies that serve the health rights, interests, and needs of all the people. You know, we're about good government. And sometimes you have to be a strong advocate for that, you know.
And you can't be an advocate without polarizing somebody. It's all a matter of which side are you on, as the Pete Seeger song.
Yes, right. Which side
really,
are you on?
Yeah.
You're a polarizing figure. At some point when I ask you, you know, as a union man, I'm going to say, are you going to protect my pension? If you say no, you've been polarized. Right? You will not be getting my vote, right?
Yes.
You know what I mean? If you're not going to protect my pension. So at some point, you want people to be polarized.
Yes,
you want
indeed.
Them to take hardcore positions. There are some things that I'm not going to compromise on.
Yes.
And other things, I know there's going to be some give and take here. You know what I mean? But, she's not going to go there and say, union folks, labor, she's going to continue to be who she is. Plus, she's married to me, so it's going to be rough for her to take any other positions other than that.
Okay, very good. Well, I'm afraid we ran out of time, but we've been talking to Aaron Ammons and Brian Dolner, both of CU Citizens for Peace and Justice, and a multitude of other various projects, you know, both individually and community and everything. So I hope you enjoyed this conversation and stuff. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WFT, and I want you to stay tuned for the Union Edge with host Charles Showalter. So in the meantime, we're going to leave you with some last bit of music from Twice Thou. And until next week, be safe and power to the people. Take care.
It's time to wake up and get with the movement. Hear the message in the music now. We could fight back, or we could lay down, or beat back the bank attack and stay proud. They got bailed out, we getting sold out. Some living underwater in their own house. They hear the word foreclosure, they get scared and think it's all over. But nah, the fight just begun. It ain't gonna be easy, but it must be won. Cause Bank of America's bad for America. Congress held hostage, they kidnapped the treasurer. This ain't the dream in the land of America, but we could change that if we stand up together. Demand something better than the status quo. We elect, they neglect, then they have to go. We gon' beat back the bank attack. We gon' beat back that bank attack. We gon' beat back the bank attack. We gon' beat back that bank attack.
Everybody stand up with the people.
Yeah, yeah.
And down with the bank, those green and black. capitalism, political arcade. Stop the evictions, we picket and blockade. March and rally for social justice. Ford signatures got the robo busted. Do the right thing now, reduce the principal. Job growth, increase residuals. We're solidified, can't divide and conquer. When we fight,
we win.
The pride to prosper. With people power, we equal the power. Civil disobedience to veto the dollar. Close our bank accounts, oppose their policy. Loan mod programs don't work, it's a lottery. So what do we do when the banks attack?
Stand up, fight.
Yeah, and we don't want no cash for keys. We want to enter this catastrophe rapidly.
We gon' beat back the bank attack. We gon' beat back.